Josh Haskin here, Israel Uncensored, the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is April 24th, 2017, and across the world today, we remember Yom HaZikaron LaShoah, LaShoah VaGvurah, Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day. Let's not forget the heroism part. Here in Israel, it is Monday morning, 9:15. In about 45 minutes, the country will stand in silence and respect for 2 minutes to pay a debt of gratitude to those who fell, the 6 million Jews who were murdered by the Nazis. Yimach Shemam, may their names and memories be erased from the annals of history. We're going to be talking about the significance of Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day throughout the show today. And to get started, we are going to go right to the phone. What more appropriate guest to have on today than Dr. Ephraim Zuroff, Chief Nazi Hunter, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Director of the Israel Office and Eastern European Affairs. Dr. Zuroff, welcome to Israel Uncensored here on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. If you can, let's start off by asking you to reflect. Give us your feelings here today, being here in the land of Israel and commemorating the 6 million Jews who were murdered at the hands of the Nazis about 70 plus years ago. What does it mean to you today, Holocaust Heroism and Remembrance Day?
Having been born and raised in the United States, I think the incredible difference between a day like today here in Israel and the same day in America or anywhere else in diaspora is very stark. In other words, this is a day whose significance is felt throughout. And in other words, this is basically the main subject today in all the media in every single way, shape, and form. In the schools, and you can't escape the subject, let's put it this way, and that's exactly the way it should be, certainly in the Jewish state. And therefore, a day like today, I personally feel, is much more significant and much more meaningful being marked here in Israel.
And for you personally, somebody who's dedicated their life to seeking justice, being the chief Nazi hunter, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, what does the day mean, the significance of it in your capacity professionally?
Well, first of all, it's I can't only relate to it professionally because it's also personal.
Right.
And I think this is true for every Jew. Certainly for Jews who lost relatives in the Holocaust, as I did. And so in a sense, it's a day of reflection. It's a day of mourning. But having said that, you could say that there is consolation in the fact that we're in a totally different place. We, the Jewish people, are in a totally different place, far more secure and far more resilient than we were 80 years ago.
I can't agree with you more. No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's the consolation, in a sense. And
yeah.
Yesterday I went to the ceremony at Yad Vashem. For the first time in many, many years. I hadn't been there for many years. I always watched it, of course, on TV. But I had a guest from overseas, and that was really the message of President Rivlin, of Prime Minister Netanyahu. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out, really. In other words, that is the major difference. That is the consolation, because there's really no consolation for the Shoah. But if there is something that we can relate to and hold on to and keep in mind, that really is the what gives us hope.
And even, and we'll get to it later in the show, but even with the daily terror attacks here, another stabbing attempt this morning near Jerusalem at the Kalandia checkpoint, and yesterday in Tel Aviv, despite that all, I agree with Dr. Zuroff that there's no better time in the history of the world, no safer time, despite it all, to be a Jew with a state of Israel, with an IDF, with an army protecting us. And in terms of what you were saying before, in terms of the feeling, you're right. It's incomparable the way we feel it here in Israel, where there's no television today, where the only television there is are stories of the Shoah. And the only songs you hear on the radio are sad songs or songs with the theme of remembrance of the Shoah. And that's just a feeling that you can't experience anywhere else in the world. There's just no comparison.
That's it. It's very true. And I think this is really a week, I think, for all of us here in Israel, for the Jews in Israel. This week, from Yom HaShoah, from Holocaust Memorial Day, through to Independence Day, which includes, of course, the day, Memorial Day, for the fallen soldiers of the IDF, is one of great significance. And it's, in a sense, a reminder to all of us what we're doing here, why we're here, and why what we're doing here is so important.
I think I've described it to my listeners over the years, a roller coaster of emotions from Yom HaShoah. First of all, from Passover, celebrating the holiday of our freedom, from there to Yom HaShoah, to Yom HaZikaron, remembering our fallen soldiers and terror victims, and then to our independence. It comes full circle, and it's truly an emotional time, probably the most emotional time of the year in Israel. But Dr. Zuroff, I want to talk about your work as a chief Nazi hunter. If you could just update us on what cases perhaps you're working on, whatever you're able to reveal at this juncture. You know, we have the survivors who are aging, of course, the perpetrators of these crimes against humanity, those who tried to destroy the Jewish people, wipe us off the face of the earth. They are also aging. Where do things stand now, and what cases perhaps are you working on in terms of bringing to justice those who perpetrated the Holocaust, the Nazis?
Well, as you can imagine, the efforts to bring Nazis to justice are winding down, primarily because of age and ill health. But there are some very actually good developments, and one of them is a dramatic change in German prosecution policy, which has paved the way for additional prosecutions, and we'll probably see several more in the coming years. That change took place about 8-9 years ago. Until that time, in order to prosecute a Nazi war criminal, the prosecution had to prove that that person had committed a specific crime against a specific victim, something which is virtually impossible these days. And ironically, because of the case of Ivan Demyanyuk, the Nazi Wachmann, Nazi SS guard who served in the Sobibor camp, but had originally been extradited to Israel, identified as Ivan the Terrible, the person who was one of two Ukrainians who ran the gas chambers at the Treblinka death camp, Germany changed its policy. And they made a decision that anyone who had served in a death camp, by death camp we mean a concentration camp with the apparatus for mass annihilation. There were six such death camps. All of them were in Poland. We're talking about Auschwitz, Treblinka, Belzec, Chełmno, Majdanek, and Sobibor. And anyone who served in the Einsatzgruppen, which were the special killing squads that operated in the areas that were once areas of the Soviet Union and murdered 1.5 million Jews by shooting, could be convicted of accessory to murder. And based on service alone, in other words, they no longer had to prove that this person had murdered a specific Jew at a specific time. And this strategy proved successful in the case of Demyanyuk, who was extradited to Germany in 2009, put on trial in Munich, and convicted in 2011 of accessory to murder. And in two additional cases, and there are additional cases going on and being investigated as we speak. And one of the things that we did, for example, was to identify members of Einsatzgruppen who, according to their dates of birth, might still be alive. Now, if you're wondering why we couldn't tell the Germans whether they were alive and where they were living, it's because in Germany, the laws regarding personal data are extremely, extremely stringent. And that's because of the Holocaust, of course, in the Third Reich. And we had we have no access to the German population registry, but of course the German government does have that access. And we were later informed that out of a list of 80 people who served on the Einsatzgruppen and were born 1920 or later, they thought that at least 8 of them might be alive. And we're waiting to see if those people can be brought to justice. So, you know, people ask me, what's your job? I say, I'm one-third detective, one-third historian, and one-third political lobbyist. Mm-hmm. In other words, I help find the people in some cases. I help build the case against them, and very often I have to try and help create political will where political will to prosecute doesn't exist.
Yeah, let's hope that those who are still able to stand trial do so, and that justice is served, and we're able to catch the last remaining Nazis before it's too late. Just one other question before we let you go. There were news reports as recent as last week indicating that perhaps the Allies in World War II during the Holocaust, when all this was taking place, that they knew about Hitler's plan, his final solution for the Jews. They knew about the death camps earlier than had been previously thought. What can you say in reference to those reports?
One of my biggest frustrations, and the frustrations of my colleagues, is the reporting by media about Holocaust issues. We knew that the Allies were aware of the mass murder of the Jews already in late 1942, 40 years ago.
So this is nothing new.
At all. Absolutely nothing. And this strikes me more as an attempt by the author of a new book on these documents in the UN War Crimes Commission to try and get publicity for his book than anything serious. I mean, this is utterly ridiculous, okay? And I'm sorry to say that Prime Minister Netanyahu also made that statement last night.
That's why I'm very glad that I did ask. To clarify
now,
that
listen,
point,
right now, and I'll tell you something that I think is important for your listeners, for our listeners.
Yes.
As time goes by, we're devoting more and more of our time to the fight against Holocaust distortion, which means we're talking about countries where they don't deny that the Holocaust took place, but they are changing or rewriting or writing a different narrative about the Holocaust, and I'm talking about post-communist Eastern Europe, where collaboration with the Nazis involved participation in systematic mass murder. In other words, only in Eastern Europe did collaboration with the Nazis include mass murder. That's not to say that, you know, there weren't Nazi collaborators elsewhere. There were in every single country in Europe, with the exception of the neutrals. But outside of Eastern Europe, that collaboration stopped at the train station. Now, what the French, the Italians, the Germans, Dutch, Belgians, et cetera, did was, of course, accessory to murder. And I'm not in any way minimizing that. That's a crime against humanity. But they were not asked to murder their own Jews. Those Jews, they asked them to send those Jews to be murdered elsewhere.
Right.
So, but in Eastern Europe, the Nazis incorporated local collaborators in Ukraine, in Belarus, in Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, parts of Poland, and Croatia, of course. And as a result, when those countries became independent / democratic and with the fall of the Soviet Union, and they had to rewrite, they had to write their history, they, of course, rejected the communist manipulations that they had done about the history of World War II and the Holocaust. But instead of accepting the Western narrative, which clearly identifies them as perpetrators, they chose to try and minimize their role or hide their role, and also to try and convince Europe and the world that their suffering under the communists could also be categorized as genocide. And this has very important implications, because if communism was genocide, then that undermines the uniqueness of the Holocaust, of course. And even worse, there were Jewish communists who committed some of these crimes. So in other words, if Jewish communists committed these crimes, how can Jews object, complain about the role played by local perpetrators in these countries. So this is all very insidious, and this is very problematic. And there's a manifesto of this movement, which we call the Double Genocide Movement. It was signed in Prague on June 3rd, 2008, and calls for a rewriting of all the history textbooks in Europe, and calls for a joint Memorial Day for all the victims of totalitarian crimes, in other words, of the Nazis and the communists, which in effect would threaten the day, it would jeopardize the future of International Holocaust Day. Now, ironically, one of the people who signed that document of June 3rd, 2008 is none other than Joachim Gauck, who today is in Israel and is scheduled to participate in the closing ceremony of Holocaust Memorial Day at Beit Lochamei Getaot. And I can't think of a more inappropriate guest. He's the only German who signed it, by the way, than Mr. Gauck. Of course, if Mr. Gauck will come to Israel, or during his visit to Israel, will announce that he made a mistake, that he withdraws his name from the Prague Declaration, that he understands that communism and Nazism are not the same, that, of course, would be a very welcome step and would justify his presence here.
Well, that's definitely extremely frustrating. I hope that happens. And after the break, I'm going to give a little personal history of my family during the Holocaust. But I just want to say that, as you mentioned, in my case, it was the Ukrainians who collaborated with the Nazis, who tortured and murdered my family. I'm talking about my close family during the Holocaust, taking advantage of the situation in order to carry out their brand of hatred against the Jews and against my family personally. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Ephraim Zuroff, Chief Nazi Hunter, Simon Wiesenthal Center, and the Director of the Israel Office and Eastern European Affairs. Continue your important holy work that you're doing to seek justice for the murder of so many of our people. Let's only hear good things in the news, and hopefully we'll get to those who we can reach and bring them to justice. Only good things, and looking forward to just thinking about it now. Looking forward to Yom HaAtzmaut and Israel's Independence Day, a happy occasion next week. I want to thank you for your time today on Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day.
You're welcome. All the best.
All the best. Only good things. And we're going to take a break right now, come back with much, much more. My name is Josh Haston. This is Israel Uncensored, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me. Josh at thelandofisrael.com is my email, on Facebook at Joshua Haston, on Twitter at Josh Haston. We'll be right back from Jerusalem.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is Windows of Jerusalem Apartments. Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments offers luxury 5-star short and long-term rental apartments in the heart of Jerusalem city center. Elegant and modern, inviting and comfortable. The view, the location, the great apartments, and the staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com. That's windowsofjerusalem.com.
And we are back here in Jerusalem. Josh Haston, Israel Uncensored, the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Monday, the 24th of April, 2017. Holocaust Remembrance Day. Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day. Let's not forget that part. Let's not forget about the heroes who fought back against the Nazis as well, as we remember the 6 million murdered by the Nazis and their collaborators during the Second World War, during the Shoah, the Holocaust. It is now 9:37 in the morning. We're also live on Facebook as we record the second half of our show. In about 22 minutes or so, we will have the 2-minute siren throughout the land of Israel in memory of the 6 million murdered by the Nazis. I want to thank again Dr. Ephraim Zuroff, Chief Nazi Hunter, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Director of their Israel Office, and he's also in charge of Eastern European Affairs. If you missed any part of that interview, you want to go back and listen to that for sure. It'll be posted shortly on the Land of Israel Network's different platforms on Facebook and on Twitter. It'll be on my personal feed as well. on Facebook, it's Joshua Haston, on Twitter, at Josh Haston. And of course, you can get in touch with me during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com. Very important what Dr. Zuroff was saying in terms of the fact that the Allies, the reports came out last week indicating that perhaps the Allies knew about the Holocaust and the death camps and the trains and everything in advance. And Dr. Zuroff said that this is not anything new, that we've known this for years and years and years, the fact that the Allies knew what was going on. And this is just a recent publicity stunt promoting some sort of book. So don't be fooled, perhaps as I was, into thinking that this is new information, that the Allies only knew about it, that we found out that the Allies only knew about it recently. So go back and listen to that interview. And as I mentioned before, I am a first-generation Holocaust survivor. My father is a survivor of the Holocaust, so it's very close and personal to me. About 100 souls, 100 members of my father's family, his side of the family, were murdered by the Ukrainian police, tortured and murdered in complete collaboration with the Nazis sometime in 1941. Thank God my grandfather had the foresight of escaping the shtetl that they were in Poland and fleeing with just my father, my uncle, again, and my grandfather, my grandmother, the rest of our family murdered by the Ukrainian police, the Nazis, you can call them the Nazis as well, during the Shoah. So this day today has extreme significance for me. And I can't also forget to mention the heroes, whether it's the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, the Partisans, the Bielski Brigade, or anyone else who fought back against the Nazis. I think it's important not to forget the second aspect of this day as we remember. We also have to remember it's Gvura. It's not just Yom HaShoah. It's Yom HaZikaron LaHaShoah VaHaGvura. Let's remember those heroes who fought back. And let's also on this day thank God that we have a Jewish state of Israel. And even with everything going on, we'll talk a little news in just a second. With everything going on, it is still the best time in the world to be a Jew. It is the best time because we have the land of Israel, we have the state of Israel, we have an army. And of course, it all comes down to God from above. But with the tools that he has given us, the IDF and security forces and everybody protecting us, you don't hear about it in the news. You don't hear about how many different attacks were thwarted. But thank God for the IDF and thank God for our security forces. Thank God we have the state of Israel. You talk about never again, only with the state of Israel will there will be able to fill that promise of never again. Just getting into a little bit of news. Knife attacks are back. I don't know if they ever went away, but yesterday in Tel Aviv, you had three or four people lightly wounded in a knife attack carried out by an 18-year-old jihadist from Shechem. Who? How did he get to Tel Aviv? Well, he was brought into Tel Aviv, reports indicate, I saw this morning on Israel National News, brought in by an NGO who believes in some sort of phony peace that if you let the Arabs from Shechem come in and see the beach in Tel Aviv, somehow there'll be peace in this region. Well, he came in, this 18-year-old, taking advantage of that program, of that NGO's generosity, and of the fact that Israel let this group, this busload of young people in to the Tel Aviv area. And he went into a hotel. He was initially stopped by the hotel guard, if you see the video, somehow managed to sneak into the hotel and went on a stabbing rampage through the lobby there of the Leonardo on the beach in Tel Aviv. Thank God, only minor injuries. I think he had a pair of wire cutters, if I'm not mistaken, before he was subdued by those brave souls who fought back against this jihadist. And that was yesterday. Today, this morning, I woke up to hear that there had been a stabbing attempt at the Kalandia checkpoint just north of Jerusalem. A female jihadist tried to stab a female security guard patrolling that area, and she was wounded. The Israeli security guard, I don't know if she was a soldier at this point, I haven't heard yet, but she was wounded light to moderate, and the terrorist was shot from what I just heard over the last few minutes. The terrorist was shot. So the series of knife attacks and the car rammings are still going on here. Again, still, despite it all, this is the best time to be here in the land of Israel. Thank God we have the state. Thank God we have the country and the army. But these attacks, and the rock attacks, of course, carrying on on a daily basis, 10, 15, 20 attacks, rock attacks by the jihadists living in Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem and other parts of the country. So that all that is still going on. But the idea of taking advantage of the kindness of Israel, and I've posted it on Facebook, you know, when you're cruel to the kind, that's what you get. And that was the case yesterday in Tel Aviv. But we saw this just a few days ago, if you haven't heard by now, two women in Gaza, one of them who was being treated for cancer in an Israeli hospital, trying to sneak explosives in to Israel on behalf of Hamas. That's what happens when you're kind to the cruel. You get situations like that. You get instances like that where people take advantage of your kindness, trying to carry out a mega attack by hiding the explosives in their cancer medicine bags. We've seen this before. The woman, of course, about a decade or so ago, who was treated in a Be'er Sheva hospital only to try to return to blow up the hospital. So we're dealing with that phenomenon here. It's not going away. This one final story I wanted to share involving terror, and I posted a video on this on Facebook last week, and I wrote an op-ed on this on the Jewish Press. I was riding my bike through Gush Etzion, as I do very, very often these days, when I saw traffic building up on the road below. I wasn't sure what was going on. Maybe it was a car accident. I saw the sirens, the ambulances, and then the police cars. The day before, in that very spot, there was a car accident. So I wasn't sure what it was until one of my neighbors from the local villages, perhaps from Beit Lechem or Hebron or one of the villages in Area C or under the Palestinian Authority, regardless, rolls down his window and screams at me. I was nearby, just on the road above, riding my bike, screams, "Allahu Akbar," in celebration of what I then learned immediately was, in fact, a jihadist terror attack. I picked up my phone and saw there was a car ramming at the Gush Juncture, another popular spot for these jihadist attacks. It has been now for over the last year and a half or so. That's how I knew, thanks to that neighbor of mine expressing his support and taunting me with the chant of Allahu Akbar, showing that he approved of the fact that someone, one of his relatives or friends or a random Arab living in the area tried to murder Jews. That's how I found out about the attack. So again, that's also the reality we're living with here. But as we reflect again one last time on this Holocaust and heroism remembrance day here in Israel, and again in about 14 minutes or so, I won't be live, but we'll be standing at attention with the siren this morning. A very emotional time of the year here in Israel, which Dr. Zuroff said, and I agree 100%, you do not feel this anywhere else in the world. It's just not comparable with an entire country, or most at least, standing in silence, giving and paying respect to the 6 million Jews murdered at the hands of the Nazis. And then next week we will stand again twice in silence, remembering the soldiers and the security personnel, as well as the victims of terror who gave their life, Al Kiddush Hashem, for our freedom here in the land of Israel, followed by the celebration of Yom HaTzma'ut. And looks like I'll be recording next Monday on Yom HaZikaron itself. We'll definitely do a show which is relevant to Yom HaZikaron. And that's it for this week, folks, for April the 24th, 2017. If you missed any part of the show, again, it'll be up on Facebook, on Twitter, landofisrael.com website. Check it out. My name is Josh Haston. Get in touch with me during the week. Josh@thelandofisrael.com is my email. On Facebook, @Joshua Haston. This is the first time we're doing a Facebook Live of the recording. Hope you enjoyed it. And you can also get in touch with me on Twitter @Josh Haston. Big shout out to my main man, Binyamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. Without him, there's no sound, and we can't do the show without Binyamin Bresky. Signing off from Jerusalem. Most importantly, between now and next week's show, everybody be safe. Shalom, shalom from Jerusalem.
Hey folks, this is Jeremy Gimpel. I want you to know, if you're a non-Jew from a Christian background or just a full-fledged Christian and you want to come to Israel, the best program tour experience that you could possibly have is to go with Hayovel. Now, it's weird. I'm an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and I'm telling Christians to go to this Christian ministry in the middle of Samaria. Let me tell you, there is no better experience for someone outside of the land, outside of the Jewish fold, to come into the land and work alongside the Jewish farmers of Samaria, to learn about the culture, to meet the people. It's an experience like no other, and I think it's also probably the cheapest way to travel to Israel. So go to hayovel.com.